Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast brought to you by Stathead. I am Jason and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hey, what's going on?
Not a lot. You know, we're kind of in the slower days of the off season, and we decided to bring back a concept. We've done a handful of shows on this, but there's still plenty more opportunities to do so. And that is our Last Game for Greats series. So newer listeners in the show, basically, we take a look at the last great game that some of the greatest players in the game had. Sometimes it's like right near the end of their career. Sometimes we have to dig a season or two back to really find a good one. But it's a fun concept. Interesting. You find some interesting results for sure.
Yeah, I always have a fun time with this show because it you know, you're looking at all-time greats, but then you're not like you're passing all of their great seasons a lot of times. You're like, all right, no, what about the final? And for some guys, it's like they don't have that slowdown. They didn't have a truly, you know, big fall off, or they didn't, you know, have some guys retired at the top of their games. A lot of guys did not. And that's where the fun part comes in a little bit of, okay, this guy, you know, was great at one time. He started to slow down, injuries piled up, he got older, whatever. Was he still great, though? He still probably had some great games. And some guys, it's easy. Like you said, some guys, it's like, oh, all right. Like, this guy had a couple great games in his final year. Some guys, you got to dig a little deeper. Like, oh, man, he was real bad those final few years. But, you know, Right. Maybe he's got one or two in there. Maybe there's something that can stand out. But that's always what makes this game so fun, or this episode type so fun, is trying to kind of weigh last and great. I always find it, I'm always trying to weigh, all right, what is truly the last, you know, great game for this guy? Does it count if it was 3 years, you know, before he retired? Maybe it is. Maybe it is truly his last great game was 3 or 4 years ago. Or is it just like an okay game that, but it can't be an okay game. It's got to be a great year. So it's a great game. Yeah. So it makes it kind of fun to kind of explore that. And I think you and I both approach it from, you know, slightly similar angles, but also kind of different ones too, which makes for a fun show. And we always get the feedback on these shows are always pretty good too, because people are like, hey, what about this game? And it's like, you know, everybody kind of defines last great game for a great player a little bit differently, which makes it, you know, extra fun too.
Absolutely. So, yeah, well, we're going to start with Michael Jordan, you know, pretty cool. Great player, I would say. Yeah.
The Bulls guy. Yeah, the Bulls guy. Right.
Yeah, the Bulls guy. Yes.
The Last Dance guy. The guy from The Last Dance. You're right.
Last Dance, yeah. Of course, we all know that The Last Dance happened, his career ended, nothing else happened after The Last Dance. So obviously, it would be from his 98 Bulls season.
Yes, I would hope. Yeah, which I would say the last great game was the Game 6 of the NBA Finals. He had a shot over Brian Russell, won the NBA title. Had a great game, left on top. Don't tell me you're going to bring up Wizards, Jordan, because I thought we all agreed as of humans that we were just never going to bring up Wizards, Jordan, again. You're going to do that, aren't you?
I did not agree to that, so I'm going to go ahead and bring up Wizard Jordan. Michael Jordan was a wizard. Yes,
he wasn't.
Yes, say it out loud.
No.
He was a wizard.
Jermaine O'Neal was not a Miami Heat, and Michael Jordan was not a wizard.
Wow. So. You have strong feelings about Jermaine O'Neal on the Miami Heat.
That's one slightly, that, you know, I forget what there was an episode we did a couple of years ago where you were like, yeah, so then Jermaine O'Neal, then he was on the Heat, and I was like, what? No. And I looked it up, and I guess there's photos of it, but that was one that I just I refused to acknowledge. Right. I just refused to acknowledge that Jermaine O'Neal was a member of the Miami Heat, so you're not going to make me do it.
Do you recognize Atlanta Hawks legend Vince Carter, or is that
of course.
Okay. All right. Thank goodness. Okay.
We well, that'd be stupid.
Didn't want to have to end the show right here.
No, of course.
You know, that would be a problem.
It was fun. Okay. It was fun in the Hawks. There was the last game of the right before the pandemic, where they're like, "Look, we don't know when we're coming back. So Vince, it's your night, pal. Go do whatever you gotta do.
You know? Yeah. Exactly. So
this is probably how you retire now. So just go do whatever.
Right. Yeah. All right. So back to Michael Jordan. Yes, Washington Wizards. Michael Jordan. Hey. Just 4 days after he turned 40 years old, this is his final season, 43 points on 641 true shooting, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 steals. He became the first, still the only 40-year-old to score 40-plus points in a game. This was his 173rd regular season 40-plus point game, plus 38 in the playoffs, which, if my math is correct, is a lot. So
that is, yes, I would define that as a lot, and I would say that makes him a good basketball player.
Right, yes. So definitely hits the game-winning layup here. And this was actually an important game because the Wizards were definitely in the playoff race at that point. They were just percentage points behind Orlando in the race for the eighth and final Eastern Conference playoff spot.
always a fierce battle in those days for the I always love the eighth seed battles in the East where you look at some of these teams and you're like, I should have just said no, neither of you can go.
Right.
I'm just gonna, and then the poor little West. There was like teams in the West that were like, hey, we have like 45 wins. Yeah, they're like, that's not gonna do it there, pal. You know,
sorry,
Phoenix, sorry, you're
geography.
Out.
It's, sorry about the geography, but that's just the way it is. Yeah, so Michael Jordan, he's quoted in the ESPN Associated Press game recap here, found on ESPN.com. I told the guys, I've got 28s left. I'm going down with no bullets. I'm going all out. It's the end of my career, and I don't want to see it end in a negative way. I want to see it end positive. I want to have fun. And then after the game, Coach Jack Collins, the Wizards had been playing poorly coming into here. They did play well in this game, but he called his players fragile, which I guess was basically like, you know, the only reason they were going to be winning this game is because Michael basically carried them on his back. So, Doug Collins, inspirational coach there for sure, calling his players fragile after a dramatic win. And then Jordan
that should
said,
do nothing to affect the psyche of one Kwame, 20-year-old Kwame Brown. I'm sure he won't be affected by
I'm sure Dre Stackhouse is having a lot of fun there. Yeah. It's a great time for everybody. So Jordan also said, it set the tone in terms of how bad I wanted to win this game. If they can't see that, if they can't see my love for the game, then obviously they don't need to be in uniform.
Yeah,
and
Juan
they definitely
Dixon.
Don't need to be on this team.
Come on, Anton Thomas.
Sometimes you've got to lead by example. I guess leading by example is better than leading by passive-aggressive quotes. not really even passive. I mean, pretty much aggressive.
Aggressive. I was going to say, I'm Jeff, not a big fan of passive-aggressive, more just inherently
aggressive.
And to be good fair, most of the time backed it up, so
it's a good point. It's not like Michael Jordan didn't do this shit, you know. I mean, he didn't, you know,
especially in 2003, not 40. Right. What is he now at this point? 40, exactly 40. 40. Yeah, exactly,
just
like you 40. Said. Yeah, just like you said, 40 year old Michael. Yeah, he doesn't have time to give a shit anymore, so sorry, so Brian Cardinal, suck it up.
you do suck it up, Brian Cardinal. And he says, I don't feel like 40. I feel good. I feel like I can compete. And on certain nights, I can compete with the best. My effort's always going to be young, no matter how you look at it. My desire to win is always going to be young. My love for the game is always going to be young. My body may say 40, but those other things are going to be young always. And I think that was an example of that tonight. So, there you go, Michael Jordan. I don't feel like I'm 43, Rich. I feel like I'm a spry 38.
There
you know?
It is. Yeah, you perform. You
can
perform like a 38-year-old for sure, yeah.
Right. I did podcasts just like I did 5 years ago. You know, I'm just as good as I was at maybe even a little better.
Maybe better. Yeah, I would say you're better. I'd say you've improved tremendously. So, I'd imagine that this game, this incredible game from Jordan, and this incredible inspirational speech by both Doug Collins and Michael Jordan, I would just assume the Wizards then. So tell me about their playoff run that they had after this.
About that. So didn't go that well. Jordan got hurt a couple of games later, although he played all 82 games of the season, which is pretty remarkable at his age. He only had like a few games later, he only had 4 points, I think, which is a career low. He had a game with 2 points, I guess, a little bit later. So a lot of low point totals here and there during that time. But yes, so it didn't work out for that well for the Wizards. They finished 5 games out of the playoff race. And they weren't that talented, and you know, the inspiration again was questionable. But you know, Jordan had a nice, going away tour. You know, had some exciting things. I mean, he had some really good, strong games down the stretch. I mean, there was 7th to last game, 25 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists. The shooting efficiency wasn't great, which is why I didn't pick that one. And obviously, if that had been like a game for like Gary Payton or even maybe like Dwayne Wade, I'd been like, oh yeah, that's good enough, you know, for a guy on the level. But for Michael Jordan, you know, your standards are a little bit higher. So, but yeah, he definitely played well, mostly during the stretch. He had a 39-point game that I almost chose in, it was in Madison Square Garden, although it came in the loss, which is another reason why I didn't pick that one. But he had definitely up and down that season. I mean, he had some games where he looked his age. He had some games where he still, you know, conjured close enough to the old Jordan. But yeah, he is actually, in addition to being the only 40-year-old with a 40-point game, he also has four of the seven instances of a 40-year-old with 30-plus points per game. So the others are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had 32. And actually, this was in the finals against Boston, the 87 finals. Karl Malone had it in the end of the season in the 2004 season with the Lakers. And then Dirk Nowitzki had it in 2019, his final season as well. And by the way, for those who might be wondering, LeBron James turns 40 on December 30th, 2024. So we got a couple years, a couple seasons away before that could happen. But you could definitely see a LeBron, competing for that. But we'll see what happens, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for all the jokes aside, like the Jordan Wizards years are not as bad as some people, you know, portray them to be. They're okay. They're fine. It was kind of a fun little run. Like, I guess some people were kind of like, I mean, there's no better way to leave than like hitting a game winning shot in the NBA finals and then just going away. But I do think maybe there was a fun factor in that 2003 season where it was like, okay, this is probably going to be it. I'm probably going to retire. Right. And everybody could go to a Wizards game and assume that this would be the last time that they were going to see Michael Jordan. I mean, the 98 season, it was left with a little bit of like, who knows, or and The Last Dance kind of reflects that too. Like, they knew it internally, but I know as fans, a lot of people were like, nah, he can't go like that. I mean, that can't be it. He's only 34 years old. Right. He's still got years in front of him, all that sort of stuff. So it was a nice closure in his career that, like, all right, here's, you know, Michael Jordan, not at the top of his powers, but still pretty good. Like, he still averaged 20 a game and still, you know, shot, you know, 45% or 44.5% from the field. So he still was a good player. Like, he was still a pretty good player. I mean, the defense had kind of suffered a little bit.
But
he was still fun, and the Wizards were interesting to watch. You know, they weren't always great. But it gave people some nice closure, I thought, to know that, okay, this is going to be it. I know for Bulls fans it was cool, too, because I wasn't lucky enough to go with one of the games, but I remember watching them on TV, and that final game in 2003, it was like, okay, this is it. Like, this is – Michael Jordan is probably never coming back here again. So it was treated as such, and they played videos and gave him a long-standing ovation, all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of cool to feel like there was finally that closure on that weird period where he just, you know, fades away in the distance after 1998 when you know that he's still so much is capable of still being great, but he's just not playing. So, they're strange years, but they're fun years too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of merit to those. So, definitely. So Rich, as you mentioned, this episode of Over and Back is brought to you by StatHead, the most powerful research tool in sports. StatHead is powered by the sports reference sites you trust and use every day, including for listeners of the show, basketballreference.com.
Yes, we use Basketball Reference and StatHead pretty extensively. This entire show, our links and our show notes are basically StatHead. Basketball Reference links up and down the entire show. We're going to have a fun little micro StatHead research at the end of this where we decided we're going through the show and then we found, hey, well, this is kind of an interesting thing. Let's figure it out. And what was great is we were able to figure it out in about 4 minutes. We split up. Hey, I'm going to look at this. You're going to look at that. And in about 4 minutes, we were able to kind of figure all this stuff out. That's how powerful the StatHead tool is and everything is at the Sports Reference a suite of sites. But we have an exclusive promo code, because if you want to get an annual subscription to any of StatHead.com's products, use our promo code BACK, B-A-C-K, to get $20 off an annual subscription to any of StatHead.com's products. So if you're listening to this and you go, yeah, I love basketball, but I really love football, you got it for the Football Reference StatHead. If you love hockey, they got it for there too. Baseball Reference, obviously, probably the most powerful of their tools. Baseball Reference, just an ungodly amount of information that you can get from that StatHead.com product. But no matter what one you want to get, $20 off an annual subscription, just use that promo code BACK, B-A-C-K, when you order any of StatHead.com's products. And we thank StatHead, of course, for sponsoring this week's show and giving us the tools, as we said, to take our research to the next level, which we did when we talked about Dirk Nowitzki's final great game, one of my all-time favorite players, Dirk Nowitzki. His game's pretty easy. It's his second-to-last game in the NBA, which is pretty fitting. It wasn't always great. It wasn't always great that last few seasons. And if you hear Dirk talk about it now, he probably wishes he hadn't played this game or the last season, or maybe even the season before that. He recently said that he can't even play sports with his children due to all the injuries he suffered over the course of his career, particularly the wear and tear from his final few seasons. So on that happy note, let's discuss his last great game, Jason. on that horrifically depressing note, let's talk about his second to last game, because he had 38-3. So Dirk was still really good until the final three seasons of his career. then things really started to fall off pretty quickly. His age 38 season, his scoring dipped to 14.2 points per game. That was the lowest since his rookie year. In 2018, his age 39 season, it drops to 12 points per game. Then it finally craters in 2019, his age 40 season. Again, being age 40 and playing basketball, not that easy. And he reflected that as well when he averaged just 7.3 points per game, 3.1 rebounds per game, started in only 20 games that season as well. So it was good because it was closure for people to say, hey, this is going to be it for Dirk. If you want to go see Dirk, this is probably it. But not a great performance that year. Things didn't go very well. But he was still capable of putting together some pretty good games here and there. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, he scored 40 points in an overtime game against Portland in March of 2016. In 2019, he had a few decent games here and there, a few decent scoring outputs. But this one is easy. His truly last great, great game has extra significance because it's his second to last game. And it is, more than anything, his final game in Dallas as well. It's April 9th, 2019. Dirk scores 30 points, grabs 8 rebounds, chips in 3 assists, and he helps the very mediocre Dallas Mavericks, that are 33-48 after this game, defeat the absolutely dreadful Phoenix Suns, who were 19-63. This was their, they clinched 4 straight years as having the worst record in the Western Conference, which is hilarious because not that many years after that, like, Kevin Durant's like, hey, I want to go to Phoenix because this is a winning culture. I want to be a part of this winning culture. It can change fast, folks. It can change real, real fast. Because, yeah, this team was in the doldrums for years and years and years, and now they're, you know, a winning culture. But again, as I said, this is an extra special game. His last home game in Dallas, the team he spends every single year of his career with. Best of all, everybody knew going in that it was going to be an important game, and he delivered it as well. They had a bunch of stuff before the game. Larry Bird and several other former players gave speeches. Dirk gave a very inspiring speech before the game and says, as you might expect, this is my last home game. So it's like,
there you go.
Get into it.
Yeah. You know, right. He needs the Collins out there to like fire up.
Right. He's, you know, hello. Yeah. I will play this game and then I will never play here again. Dirk Nowitzki, everybody.
Like, you know, pathetic. You're
not exactly the most, you know, right. It is Dirk. Not exactly the most, you know, energetic man in the world, but Dirk was there.
Sure.
But so he has a great game. Great relative. It took him 31 shots to get here. He was 5 of 14 from 3 to get it done. But God damn it, he got it done. This is his 245th and final 30-point game of his career. It was clear that they were just force-feeding him shots, that he would take the first 8 shots. He'd score Dallas's first 10 points. Clearly a showcase game for him and everybody to kind of celebrate his career. His final points comes on a one-legged fadeaway, just perfect. Again, they took, you know, should have taken him out of game immediately after that. But a fun fact about this game, and I'm sure we have talked about it on this very show because we did a big series on 50-point games.
Yep.
Over and back favorite Jamal Crawford scored 51 points in this game. Yes, you remember Jamal Crawford, 2019 Phoenix Sun. Of course you do. But he's 1 point off his career high here. And as I said, clinched Phoenix's 4th straight season of having the Western Conference's worst record. So Jamal Crawford, 51 for him. So did not overshadow this game, though, for Dirk. And this was, again, his final game in Dallas. He would play one more game the following night against San Antonio, where he'd score 20 points and grab 10 rebounds. Not a bad game again there in San Antonio. But that would then be it for Dirk. He would then retire thereafter. And now I forget, he does something in the Dallas front office. They call him when they want to make a bad coaching hire or something like that. So I forget what exactly is going on. I guess I take that back. The Jason Kidd hire ended up being okay. But, you know, at the time, I'm like,
I don't know if long-term it's going to be.
Yeah, we'll see. I reserve the right to say that I was right if it doesn't go well. But so far, 1 year, it's been okay. So that is Dirk's final great game.
Sure. So we could do a little bonus here about Jamal Crawford, because this was definitely his last game, and actually would have been his final game, but he did play one game for Brooklyn, I believe, in the bubble.
Yes.
So he played one. Otherwise, he would have ended his career with a 51 game.
Oh no! Really?
That's still awesome. I believe he's the oldest player to have 50, because he was 39 at the time. So.
He didn't play again, because that was it. That they didn't play a game after that.
Yeah, that was last. That was last game.
Just like Michael Jordan, he's ruining his legacy.
Ruining his legacy. Yes. So he played 6 minutes for the for the Nets during the bubble, and other than that, so that was clearly Jamal Crawford's last great game. So you get a bonus last great a game stat there.
Yeah, but, there you go. You can ask for it. You got it.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So speaking of not asking for, but getting it, Kevin McHale. Kevin McHale, I don't know where I got that, but, you know. In any case, McHale, he, of course, Boston Celtics legend for the 80s, along with Larry Bird and Robert Parrish, you know, stout Celtics team of the 80s, you know, won three championships, you know, perennial finals contenders for a very long time up until the late 80s when the Pistons planted them. But, you know, it's easy to forget that, hey, actually, the Celtics were still a pretty strong team in the early 90s, despite, you know, having those aging players, you know, Bird, you know, retiring before 92. They did have Reggie Lewis, you know, they had some other younger talent. So they were still, you know, going pretty good. And the 1993 season, you know, again, a pretty quality season for the team. McHale himself, the injuries definitely had gotten to him at this point. You know, the foot problems that he had, you know, ever since the late 80s when he broke his foot, but, you know, continued playing for a long time. But yeah, the Celtics this year, 48-34, you know, definitely a strong team. Even though McHale didn't have a strong year, he absolutely, when it counted, he absolutely had one of the incredibly strong performance. This would have been the game two of the Eastern Conference first round, 1993. He had 30 points on 7-43 true shooting and 10 rebounds off the bench, the third to final game of his career. So this one's really cool. I mean, one is in the playoff context. One, you know, it's almost completely out of nowhere because he had really not played well for most of that season. He did play well just in general in the series, but this was by far the most standout game. But also, you know, it's in Boston Garden. You know, the fans know that there's a chance this is the last time they are ever going to see him, you know, play in Boston Garden. His retirement hadn't been announced, but it was definitely something, you know, it was an open secret. There's an article in the Sam Smith Tribune who's, you know, talking about, you know, it was going to be about the other players, you know, Robert Parrish joking, saying that I hate to see Kevin go because he took care of all the interviews. And but Parrish also saying, hey, I feel so sorry for him because of, you know, how his foot is and no one wants to go out that way. And then Charles Barkley said, Kevin's the best player I ever played against. So, you know, so this was definitely the emotion of that crowd, like, you know, one, knowing that he's going, and two, seeing him kind of come out of nowhere and just put like an incredible effort, you know, barely hitting all of these shots. It's like every single shot he hits, it just sort of like barely, like it bounces in, or it's just after like the outstretched hands of Alonzo Mourning or all that. And there's one highlight in particular where it's McHale is basically fighting Larry Johnson for an offensive rebound, and he like tips it up in the air like several times and they battle of it, and he finally gets it and then just, you know, hits a little jumper for an and one and gets the foul. It's just like, and the crowd just goes nuts for it. It's a really, really cool moment and, you know, really cool way for, you know, him to go out, you know, basically in his career.
Yeah. 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 It's always extra importance. And I do try. I always, every time we do one of these series, I look at playoffs and I'm like, come on, he had to have a great playoff game. And a lot of these guys just don't, a lot of the guys don't make the playoffs at the end, which kind of sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Having a playoff game, having a game where, like you said, most people knew that we're getting towards the end here, that things are going to start kind of slowing down for him, and it's going to be the end. Like that, it brings on some extra significance. And this is a pretty good game. This is a great game for him, and especially so because, like you said, things were really starting to go south for Kevin McHale, and it looked like, all right, this guy is running on fumes here. And really, Boston was running on fumes, as you mentioned. This was very close. This was going to be just about the end. We didn't know exactly how much of the end this was going to be, because obviously the Reggie Lewis thing is going to happen shortly thereafter. But this is like the last blow to the, you know, the Celtics dynasty once
right.
McHale's kind of done. And yeah, Parrish is kind of there, but I mean, it doesn't. Him alone is not, you know, enough to
right.
hold this thing
together. Especially, yeah, 57-year-old Robert Parrish.
Still kind of the legacy Celtics. Robert Parrish is here.
So McHale, he helps. I mean, he sparks the team to come up, because they were down pretty, down by, I think, 20 or so in the third quarter. Then he rallies in the fourth quarter, you know, scoring 13 of the team's 22 points, sends it into overtime. Unfortunately for Boston, they ended up losing it in overtime, two overtimes actually. And then the Hornets ended up taking care of business in Charlotte in games 3 and 4. It was a 5-game series at the time to win the series. So definitely a little bit of a changing the guard there with, you know, the Hornets with Larry Johnson, Lonzo Mourning appearing to be like possibly, you know, a future great team. You know, that was obviously core. That obviously didn't work out between them, and the Hornets dealt Mourning, even though they were fine for most of the rest of the 90s. They had some good teams there, but it was never, you know, never filled the promise that was kind of thought of.
No,
that.
Kept like, yeah, moving parts. Yeah, they would always like have a team and then move it, and then have a team and then move it. Yeah. And then they ended up like, that was got good players in return, but it was, well, until the, you know, the final stretch.
Right.
But it was like, all right, like you're going to trade this guy for this guy. But then it worked. And then you have Eddie Jones. And you're like, oh, okay, this kind of works too. And you don't have Eddie Jones. It's like, all right, what are you guys doing? Like,
It's probably hard for people to imagine now, but there was definitely a time like in the early 90s where like the Hornets were like a cool team. Like people were into the teal and
the
into
coolest
the,
team. Yeah. Like,
Everybody
had their jerseys. Everybody had their starter jackets. Also, everybody in Charlotte liked the Hornets and went to their games.
Right.
And like, you know, they were a really cool team. And then they became a toxic team very, very quickly thereafter, mostly because of their owner. And now they kind of exist, you know, sort of. Right.
I think they have pretty good support there. They got LaMelo Ball. I mean, they're kind of a fun team, but they definitely were, you know, there was a time when they were like one of like the three most popular jerseys in, you know, next to like Bulls and Lakers, you know, of the time. I mean, I think they were definitely right up there for, you know, a couple of years. I think Larry Johnson probably had a lot to do with that, you know, coming from UNLV, but, yeah, it's just kind of an interesting thing that I think it would be, if you weren't there at the time, it would be hard to believe.
Right, or the Muggsy Bogues phenomenon, too, if you weren't alive for that.
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah,
just a gigantic star in his time.
Yeah, which, absolutely.
You know, it was hard to believe, but it was true. It happened.
All right, it did. Yeah, and then Robert Parrish eventually was like, hey, I want to join on this Hornets phenomenon. So he went over
Hello,
there.
Hello, fellow children.
All right, he's like, I'm cool. I'm wearing these. I'm wearing this teal. I'm down. Right. I'm hip. And then he latched on to the 96 Bulls and got another championship.
Hell yeah, he did.
So, as you mentioned, and Reggie Lewis didn't play in this game. He only played in game 1 of the series. I'm not sure if it was related to the heart concerns or if it was another thing. But, he you know, so the Celtics had to battle back without, you know, basically their best player. So, and obviously they came close but weren't able to pull it off. But yeah, this is definitely a really fun one. And the highlights are really great. There's a great, there's a set of highlights on NBA Cobwebs on Twitter, on his account. So there's some really great stuff there, really dramatic.
All right, so we'll move on to Gary Payton next. And this was a little harder than I expected, as Payton was actually still pretty solid until even the final few years of his career. He wasn't the star that he had been, you know, obviously the decade prior, but he was still a decent rotation piece for the Miami Heat, for the Boston Celtics. He bounced around a couple times, I guess kind of for the Milwaukee Bucks, but nobody really remembers that. So we'll just talk about the Heat and the Celtics here, because those are really the games that I looked at. So as far as Sonics-wise, if his last great, great game was with the Sonics. He had 40 points, 10 assists for the Sonics, December 4th, 2002. One of 6 40-plus point games for Payton, all regular season, none in the playoffs. As far as 10 assists, well, that was business as usual. He'd have 277 10-plus assist games in his career. So we can't obviously pick a game from 2002 as Gary Payton's final great season, so we have to move it on to a couple more seasons after that. So, of course, he moves from the Sonics to the Bucks for 28 of the most exciting games that anybody could ever remember. Not really. The next year, he was off to the Lakers to join Shaq, Kobe, and Karl Malone. The team was an absolute mess, but still made it to the NBA Finals, the second time that Gary Payton had made it to the finals in his career, before they fell in a massive upset to the Detroit Pistons. Well, an upset in at the time, in hindsight, maybe not. Also, at the time, kind of like, well, it kind of felt like this team was all going to fall apart, but it still felt like, well, there's enough talent that they're going to overcome it. They did not. The Lakers lose, and the whole thing breaks up. Gary Payton is on the move. He then goes to Boston to help turn their fortunes around before rounding out his career with 2 seasons in Miami and finally getting an NBA title with Miami as well. So considering Payton did play until 2007, again, we can't pick a game from 2002. So I don't know. I'm having trouble with these ones. His best game for Miami probably comes on December 11, 2005. Wasn't truly great. 21 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. That's fine. If we're using the criteria of last and great, we probably have to go to the December 17, 2004 game when Payton is still a member of the Boston Celtics, as he has 27 and 11. So not only is this a double-double in a win, it was super efficient too. He scored those 27 points on 10 of 13 from the field and a perfect 2 of 2 from 3-point as well. He dishes out 11 assists, grabs 6 rebounds, and his 29-game score was his best game score since the 2002 season. Doc Rivers is quoted as saying he was awesome. Tonight was Gary's night. So he was thought to be a key piece. This is obviously, this is not the Boston Celtics that are all ready to go and ramped up. This is kind of this weird in between Boston Celtics where they're kind of still trying to figure out exactly what they're going to. I mean, they're still a good team. They've been obviously in the playoffs. They made long playoff runs time and time again. We're in the final few stages of the Antoine Walker. This is obviously the year that he gets traded. Paul Pierce is still here. They're trying like hell to get this Boston team to figure out what this Boston team needs to get over the hump, and they still just can't get over the hump. Gary Payton tries all he can. You know, he's pretty damn good for this team, but he has not helped them get over the hump. Rafe LaFrenz does not give them over the hump, believe it or not. The big haul they got for Antoine Walker does not get them over the hump, believe it or not, as they lose in the first round to the Indiana Pacers. And obviously, as we said, Gary Payton moves on to the Miami Heat, where he then goes and wins an NBA title. So good for him. But yeah, I'd say this is probably his last great game. 27-11 for the Celtics. The quotes are all, the postgame quotes are all about how this was like a great game by Gary. He's setting the pace for the team. He's getting us ready. He's doing the fast break. Everything is going well in Boston, except for it's just going to be kind of the same old mediocre stuff that it was for Boston for a lot of this time period. And so they decide to change everything and get Ray Allen and get Kevin Garnett and blow the whole thing up and try to build the big three. But yeah, at this time, Boston's like a fun team that's just, you know, kind of they're going to win 45 games and lose in the first round or lose in the second round. That's pretty much what they did at this time. So,
right. Yeah, they kind of ended up taking a step back, getting some young players that eventually turned them around to get Garnett and Allen. It took a little while for that, obviously. But yeah, no, I would agree. It's hard because like Payton was still like a useful player, but he was definitely a role player. And there were very few times where he was like actually, you know, getting huge minutes and right. it would be here and there, but it was definitely like he played his role well, but he definitely, you know, fell into the role, you know?
Some of these guys, like they just get so old that you can't play them a lot. Whereas Gary Payton was more like, hey, we're just going to play you like 27 minutes. Is that cool? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, he kind of accepted that role in a way that it was like, if he wanted to, he probably could have played more minutes. If he wanted to, he could have went to some terrible team and started and played, you know, as many minutes as he wanted. But at this point, he was like, I just really want a title. I just really want to help a team win. So he would, you know, at this time, he's kind of bouncing around to different teams trying to figure it out. But he's fitting into however the team wants him to fit in. And like you said, he's not giving himself that many opportunities to go out there and be a superstar. He's just like, hey, I'll do whatever you guys need. I'll do my 20 minutes. I'll come off the bench. I'll do whatever. So, yeah, you're kind of at a loss for great games in this era because he kind of accepted the role player role and was perfectly fine just doing that.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's sort of like, yeah, he probably had enough of the tank to get it there, but he, in the team context that he had, it was fine. I mean, he obviously hit some big shots in the 06 finals, and he certainly did a lot of contributions, but wasn't carrying the ball, you know, in the same way. And he wasn't, you know, I mean, he was also, I mean, he was a star, absolutely, but he wasn't the kind, you weren't looking for Gary Payton to like lead you in scoring all the time and lead you to the finish line. He was more, I mean, he was a guy who could do that at times, but he was more a complete player who's going to, you know, be a great defender and set other guys up and all that and be, you know, and lead a great team rather than carry it all on his own for the most part.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Next, we have Dwayne Wade. So he returned to the Miami Heat for a couple of about a season and a half after some stops in Chicago and Cleveland.
I feel like in a couple of years we need to agree to not acknowledge the Cleveland.
Oh,
run,
all right. We're not going to acknowledge that.
That was
right.
A weird run. That run was
fair enough. It was a little odd.
So
yeah.
Bad. Yeah, that run was terrible. But I would like to not acknowledge the Chicago run, but I understand I probably cannot do that.
So. I mean, I think the three alphas are going to live with us forever. So I don't think that's a possibility. Yeah. So, all right. Dwayne Wade, 60 games left in his career against the Toronto Raptors, 35 points on .698 shooting percentage, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. He's off the bench, which sets a new Miami Heat record off the bench of 30. 5 points illustrious. So that can go up along with the the banner for Michael Jordan's number. You know, that can also go 35 is the bench record. You know, that can because Miami's not weird at all about when we're retired, right?
No, not at all. Yeah.
All right. Yes. So in any case, this was the championship year for the Raptors. So they got off to, they had gotten Kawhi Leonard in the offseason. They were 17-4 after this win. So they were a juggernaut, they were down big, 26 in the third quarter, actually, but they did rally to make it closer. And, Wade was 4-7 from three, made a whole lot of shots in the third quarter, especially. So he did, he helped cut it down. It got twice. He got a 3-pointer that cut the lead down to 8, but then, Fred VanVleet was able to get baskets of its own, and the Raptors, pretty much went on a run late to finish up in the fourth. But yeah, Eric Spoelstra said it's a shame that kind of game is wasted on a loss. And then later on, Kyle Lowry and Dwayne Wade swapped jerseys after the game. So that was a thing that Wade definitely did, before each game, is he would, he and another player on the other team would swap jerseys during it. So now Lowry being on the Heat, I'm like, oh, is there a little bit of future tampering going on there? Maybe somebody should investigate. I don't know. Right.
Yeah, let's take some picks away from the Heat here.
Yeah, Lowry, he's quoted as saying, he's a future Hall of Famer. It'll go up in my house. I'll have a couple stories I can tell my kids a long time from now. So that's a fun one. Yeah, so interestingly enough, Wade only started 2 games in the final season of his career, actually the final 2 games of the season, which I kind of forgot he was coming off the bench strength.
Yeah, I did too. Made sense. He's coming to Miami, and that's obviously a team that is still competitive, still a good team, so I do get why they might, but yeah, I was kind of surprised. Like, Wade seems like the type of guy, nothing against Dwayne Wade, but he seems like the type of guy that would probably just prefer to start. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to play the whole game, but seems like a guy who would like to start. But hey, credit to him of saying, hey, look, I'll come off the bench. I just, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I get it. It's cool.
I guess I'm not 100% why you would start Roddy Magruder over Dwayne Wade. I mean, I know Magruder probably provided good defense. And yeah, I'm sure there probably was a good reason to do that, but I'm not questioning.
Yeah, it's weird though. If you had told me, hey, did Dwayne Wade start most of the games of his final year in, I would say, yeah, I would probably have said yes. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't.
Yeah. And actually you could have picked the last 2 games of his career, because they were both pretty strong. His final home game, second to last game of the season, he had 30 points, but it was on 10 of 23 shooting, didn't really do a lot in the box. I mean, three runs, 3 assists, certainly a good game. A nice finale for Miami, but I didn't qualify it as great. His final game in Brooklyn, with 25 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, so triple double in his final game. That was pretty cool, but he did shoot 10 of 28 from the field. So that was one reason not to include that. But I mean, you definitely could have stood out. Again, Dwayne Wade, I have a little bit of higher expectations for than certain players. So I think the standards need to be a little bit higher. So that's why I picked the game that I picked.
There you go. All right. Our final here, Artis Gilmore.
Oh,
yeah. So somewhere along the line, unfortunately, Artis, he gained the nickname Rigor Artis for his poor play, lack of athleticism during his final few years in the NBA. Once an elite scorer and a rebounder for the Kentucky Colonels of the ABA, he would join the Chicago Bulls in the NBA in the 70s. Continued his great play, helped legitimize the late 70s Chicago Bulls as well. While the Bulls never won a title, Gilmore did keep them in contention for most of his run there. He made an All-Star team 4 times with the team. In July of 1982, the Bulls trade Gilmore to the San Antonio Spurs, where he'd team up with fellow cool-as-fuck dude George Iceman Gervin. That is an all-time cool team there. George Gervin and Artis Gilmore, man. That's just dripping with coolness for the San Antonio Spurs. So the team played well.
And, of course, Dave Corzine, of course.
He was traded. Yeah. Unfortunately, they realized the Bulls were like, look, that's too much cool, so you're going to have to give us Dave Corzine. You can't have Corzine, Gilmore, and George Gervin. Like, you're going to be a marketing dynamo. Yeah. Like, people are going to be just running down to the Freeman Coliseum or wherever the hell they're playing at this time, just demanding to see this cool team. I mean, they would just define the 70s and the 80s with that trio. Right. So luckily, the Bulls were smart enough to say, no, you got to give us Corzine or else you're going to be too powerful. So
that's a good point, yeah.
So the Bulls got the coolness that is one Dave Corzine. Right. But
absolutely.
The team played well. They made the Western Conference Finals in their first season. They lost to the Lakers, as a lot of teams did in the Western Conference in the 80s. Unfortunately, after that year, he was never able to get the Spurs out of the first round. And by the time he left, the Spurs were really struggling, and he was kind of falling out of favor as well. Gilmore would rejoin the Bulls for a portion of the 1988 season, playing alongside Michael Jordan, but he only lasted 24 games with the team. By that point, he had greatly slowed down, was nowhere near the player he had been prior. And as such, there's not a whole lot of great games for this second Bulls run. And then he would also join the Boston Celtics that same year. Yes, there was a Boston Celtics Artis Gilmore run in 1988. Yep. It is not very good. The closest we can get there is 15 points and 7 rebounds on March 26th of 1988. But that's not enough for my man Artis. We got to get him something better. I'm going to cheat here. There's two games. I can't choose. There's two games that are really good. Maybe I'll let you be the deciding factor here. For which game is truly his last great game. So the first is February 3rd, 1987, still in San Antonio. Yeah, we're going to just skip the Bulls years and the Celtics here. We're going to skip all that stuff. There's not a lot of good stuff there. We're going to go to 1987 where he scores 24 points, shooting 10 of 11 from the field, grabs 18 boards, swats away 3 shots. His game score, 27.3, a season high. The Spurs win by 8 as well, so not too bad. From one Artis Gilmore. But that one's a good one, but I think this one's a good contender. March 22nd, 1987, later than the prior game. So if we want to get technical about last great game, this one might count a little bit more. 22 points and 16 rebounds with 4 blocks in a Spurs win over the Clippers. Artis shoots 8 of 14 from the field. And then that, if we really want to get crazy, if we want to go a little bit before, February 4th, 1985, Gilmore scores 25 points, 5 of 8 from the field, 15 of 21 from the free throw line. So he definitely made his money at the free throw line there. Grabs 13 rebounds and blocks 10 shots. So it's 1985. It's tough to be the last great game. I feel like there's two that are in there, but we had to talk about that one because he blocks 10 shots. That's pretty fun. And it actually leads us to another fun little micro segment that we're going to do at the end of the show here. Some triple doubles with 10 blocks.
Sure. Before we get there, I do want to. I would say I'm going to go with the March 22nd, 87, the 22-16 with 4 blocks. I think that one.
That works for me too.
I think that's good enough for a great game. Yeah, and actually, like that. Yeah, that last year where he split with the Bulls and the Celtics. Boy, like having to play with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird. I'm sure getting on his case for being shitty. Like in his last year, can have been fun for Gilmore, excuse me. But yeah, that year before, like he was still a pretty good player for the Spurs. I mean, he was definitely up and down, but he had a lot of good games. Not a lot of great ones, but a lot of still good games during that year. So he was still a good player up until his last season. Obviously had a good long career, but yes, triple doubles with 10 blocks. So we StatHead, of course, used the powerful StatHead tool. We did searches for 10 plus points, 10 plus assists, 10 plus blocks, which there were 3 instances of that. We'll get to the details in a moment. And then also 10 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 blocks. There has never been a game, by the way, in which there were 10 blocks and 10 steals by one person in the same game. That has never happened. Yeah. So
somebody can do that, though. If you're listening, if you're an NBA player listening, your time is now to get 10 blocks and 10 steals in the same game.
Yeah.
And then you just got to score 10 points, too, or get 10 rebounds. You don't do whatever.
Right. Either way. Right. Whatever you want to do.
Turnovers, they don't count. So you can't turn the ball over. That's not going to count for us.
Right. I don't know. If you get 10, I mean, listen, if you're able to get 10 blocks and 10 steals and 10, if you get 10 turnovers, we'll talk about it. You know, we'll make a ruling here. I feel like maybe, you know, we can talk about it. We'll negotiate. But anyway, yes. So the 3 instances of 10 points, 10 assists, 10 blocks. Nate Thurmond, we've talked about this game before. I've talked about all these games before because they're all quadruple doubles. Nate Thurmond, October 18th, 1974, 22 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists, 12 blocks. Hakeem Olajuwon, March 29th, 1990, 18 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, 11 blocks. David Robinson, February 17th, 1994, 34 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 blocks. So that takes care of assists and blocks. If you want to have rebounds and blocks, that's happened a lot more frequently. Not totally surprised, because if you get 10 blocks and you get 10 points, there's a good chance you're getting a lot of rebounds.
Yeah, that's a good chance. You're tall enough to get some rebounds. Well. Yeah. Right. I love the idea of a guy that's just blocking shots left and right, but then a ball comes off the rim and he's like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm terrible at rebounding.
Right. Like, what the hell? They're like, get the boards, man. Like, sorry. It's coming so fast off the rim. I can't, it comes off the backboard sometimes. It's very weird. I don't like it. Right. I don't want to jam my fingers. Yeah. I'm staying away from that. So
it hurts. Yeah, absolutely. So there were 93 instances of this, which would include the three that were mentioned above.
You're going to list the other 90 ones right now. All right. I am going to go away, but when I come back, I'm sure you will have listed all 90 of them. So, all right.
All right. I won't do that. However, I will mention.
It's fine. I'll stay.
In 40 cases, there were 20 plus points. In 12 cases, there were 20 plus rebounds. And in 8 cases, there were 20 plus points and 20 plus rebounds. And I will name those. So Shaquille O'Neal did that. He had 24 points, 28 rebounds, and 15 blocks November 20th, 1993 for the Magic against the New Jersey Nets. Elvin Hayes, 22 points, 27 rebounds, 11 blocks, March 3rd, 1978 for the Bullets against Detroit. Hakeem Olajuwon, 32, 25, and 10 for the Rockets against the Magic in 1989. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 39 points, 23 rebounds, 10 blocks for the Lakers against the Hawks in 1975. That was in overtime. These are all wins, by the way. This first one is the first loss. Sean Bradley, you think of winner, you think of Sean Bradley, 22 points, 22 rebounds, 13 blocks, 1998 for Dallas against the Trail Blazers. Kareem again, second time, 29 points, 29 rebounds, 11 blocks, also 1975, just about a month later after his first one for the Lakers against the Pistons. Hakeem Olajuwon again, 24, 21, and 12. Also in 1989, about a month before his other one against the Jazz, they're happening in Spurs. Joakim Noah, 23 points, 21 rebounds, 11 assists for the Bulls in 2013. Kind of late in his run against the 76ers. Obviously, he didn't have a long career, but yeah.
I think I want to say that's the year. Let me look at it real quick. There was this weird Bulls year where like everybody was hurt and they just basically had Joakim Noah do everything. It wasn't good, and he got like low ballot like MVP love that year. You said it was 2013, right?
That was the year they beat the Nets, right? In the
like Luol Deng had a spinal tap and was gone. It was so weird. It was Carlos Boozer, Joakim Noah, and Nate Robinson leading them. I think Richard Hamilton was there too. Things got real weird for a while there. But I want to say that's the year that Noah was just like, all right, guys.
That was a great year for him and a great performance in that series. That was really awesome.
It was a great series. Just an incredible series. And then they faced the Miami Heat, and guess what? It did not go as well. And the absolute machine that was the 2013-2014 Miami Heat, or the 2012-2013 Miami Heat, who were just like, no, no, we're going to beat you guys very, very easily. So let's get this out of here. So
absolutely. So, all right. So, this is it. Some great stuff here. This is a lot of fun. Some good things. I learned a little bit about all of these players, things that I didn't know before. So fun times here. As we mentioned, this episode Over and Back brought to you by StatHead. Use the exclusive promo code back to get $20 off an annual subscription to any of StatHead.com's products. Absolutely recommended. Great stuff. We couldn't do the show without it. So thanks again to StatHead for sponsoring this week's show. Thanks to all of the listeners. Please subscribe. Give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you would listen to. If you want to reach us in social media, we are on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. We'd love to hear from you guys. So thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.